There's a time and a place for a fillet of fish. But breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
When you switch to Frontier Gig Service, you don't have to worry about your internet dropping out at the worst possible times. And you can talk to friends and present in work meetings without sounding like this. Seriously, no more of that nonsense. Change to fiber. Change to better. Upgrade to Frontier Gig Service on our 100% fiber network for $59.99 and get a $200 Visa reward card on us. Exclusive offer for qualified households only. Go to frontier.com/shopfiber for complete offer details. Service is subject to availability and all applicable terms and conditions.
CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Professor Serhii Plokhii, his new book is Nuclear Folly, A History of the Cuban Missile Crisis. It is 1962. The White House is informed there's a red line and it's been crossed. The White House is seeking an answer. But why? Why did Khrushchev do this? As Kennedy says in his first blush of analysis, he doesn't gain anything from this. He can wipe us out with his ICBMs. He doesn't need to put medium-range or short-range missiles into Cuba. He certainly doesn't need them to put them in the hands of Castro's regime. So why? Turns out that Khrushchev himself had this idea during a trip to Bulgaria in the spring of 1962. What is Khrushchev's mind at this point, Professor?
Well, Bulgaria was not an accident, because in Bulgaria he was talking to rallies that were organized for him by the communist leaders of Bulgaria, pointing across the Black Sea from Bulgarian port city of Varna toward the Turkish territory, where a few years earlier the U.S. installed the ballistic missiles, nuclear-armed ballistic missiles, called Jupiters. And idea came to him to put an equivalent of Jupiters to Cuba next to the borders of the United States. And as he said, allow the Americans to taste their own medicine. Why he was doing that? Because despite his bluff, the Soviet Union at that time, in 1962, had no more than 5 or 6 intercontinental missiles, ballistic missiles, that could reach the territory of the United States. While the United States at that time was building, and more than that, was deploying the Minuteman missiles that could hit the territory of the Soviet Union from Montana, from the American Midwest. Khrushchev had nothing to no missiles to respond to the challenge that was posed by Minuteman. So this balance in terms of the missiles and the number of missiles and the kind of missiles that they had, the so-called missile gap, was there. But unlike Kennedy claimed during his presidential campaign that the missile gap was in favor of the Soviet Union, in reality, the missile gap was in favor of the United States. Khrushchev knew that, and Khrushchev wanted to deal with that by putting his intermediate missiles and medium-range missiles on Cuba, from where they could reach Washington, they could reach New York, they could reach good part of eastern United States.
These missiles are called technically R-12s and R-14s. NATO called them sandals for the R-12s, skiing for the R-14s. One has a shorter range than the other, and they reach well into the United States, Washington, D.C., certainly from Cuba. The first secretary, Mr. Khrushchev, has this idea, and when he returns to Moscow, he puts it in motion. It becomes Operation Anadir, and he's looking to draft the Soviet missile forces that he spent a great deal of money on. It's taken money from the military, the army, and the navy, and put it into missiles. He needs somebody to command this unit, however. And here, Professor, I puzzle. He points to a very famous cavalryman, Pliev of North Ossetia. Why did he choose the cavalryman to lead what is essentially a nuclear missile strike force?
Well, that was the question that the commanders of the missile units that were shipped to Cuba were asking themselves and asking their commanders. And Khrushchev provided explanation later, decade later, at least in his memoirs. And the explanation is that he expected that there can be an American invasion of Cuba, and that having missiles alone was not enough, that he needed infantry, he needed other troops that could protect his missiles in case of the American invasion. So for that, he needed a person who had some experience in commanding troops of different kinds, not only missile troops, but also infantry and others. And Bleier made name for himself of acting in cooperation, in coordination with the tank formation. So he was the commander of the cavalry units, but they were working together with tank units during the Second World War. So this 19th or maybe 18th or 17th or 16th century military technology of horses with the 20th century tanks. And that was one reason. Another reason that Pliev just showed how loyal he was to the Communist Party and to the Communist leadership. On the orders from Moscow, a few months before his deployment to Cuba, he used tanks to crash the popular uprising in the Russian city of in one of the Russian cities in North Caucasus. And recently the Russians made film about that. There was bloodshed. So he was someone who didn't hesitate to follow and fulfill whatever orders he was getting from Moscow. So those two factors really contribute to this very unorthodox choice by Khrushchev to send a cavalryman to Cuba, who was also by the Soviet standards already quite aged, and most importantly was in poor health, but he was loyal, and that's what mattered the most for Khrushchev.
The deployment of a large number of Soviet troops was unknown to the White House at the time, and in fact, the professor begins his book by saying how shocked Robert McNamara was to learn that the Soviet deployment was nearly 50,000 troops on the island. Mentioning that now because invasion was always on the mind of the Presidium and of the White House. A military invasion, Op Plan 312 it was called. The Joint Chiefs were always ready to follow airstrikes with a ground invasion. What we know now is that would have triggered events that are catastrophic to imagine. It wasn't just one brink they were coming to. They kept coming back to the same brink because they had nukes, tactical nukes, strategic nukes, nukes at the ends of air-to-air missiles, nukes everywhere. Now we come to what it is that they're going to do to send these missiles, the R-12s and the R-14s. You spend a wonderful time telling the story from the point of view of the Soviet soldiers who were deployed in these ships to sail to Cuba. They didn't have any preparation for the weather or the conditions in Cuba. For example, they believed that they could hide the missiles under the Cuban canopy. They also believed that they could suffer this tropical climate. Neither were accurate. They were overwhelmed. And they had poisonous food. They had poisonous trees. These were very brave men who toughed it out. Is that all well known? Has this all been explicated before, that they were so uninformed of what they were going to in Cuba? If any of them had been allowed to apprise the conditions in Cuba, they would have spoken out immediately saying, we can't hide our missiles and we can't survive.
The story of Soviet deployment to Cuba is told by me on the basis of some already known sources, but others are the sources that I was the first historian to really tap and use. Those were the KGB reports that are now available in the KGB archive in Kyiv. And those are the reports of the KGB officers that accompanied the Soviet ships that were going to Cuba. Most of them were going through the Ukrainian ports, through the Black Sea ports, and ended up in the Ukrainian archives. And they tell really the story of secrecy. They also explain how the Soviets were able to put on the island more than 40,000 troops when the American intelligence, CIA, and beyond that, believed that there were only 10,000. And that was by putting people really in inhuman conditions, where they were in this overheated twin decks, again, allowed to go and breathe fresh air only when they were in the middle of Atlantic and only during night. And they were not prepared on many levels. We think about the Cold War today, and we think about the Soviet Union as a global power, as a power that would be present in one way or another in Vietnam or in Africa. But all of that came already after the Cuban Missile Crisis. This trip to Cuba was the first time that the Soviet either Navy or the Soviet troops or the Soviet missile units were put outside of the familiar habitat of Eurasia or Europe. So they were not prepared to either people or the Navy ships. Well, the submarines in particular were not prepared to function in the tropical or close to tropical conditions. When they landed in Cuba, they found out that the frequency for their electricity was different. So their radios couldn't work and couldn't function and so on and so forth. And it's really really heroic deed on their part, not to say, okay, we're giving up, we're leaving. They didn't do that.
We're going back to the White House because during the week of the week after the discovery of the missiles, there are twists and turns that include the fact that the Joint Chiefs of Staff, especially the Air Force, are challenging directly the credibility of President Kennedy. We will see that the U.S. is not moving in one direction. There are several choices, and the president is the only person who can sort this out, and yet he is reluctant. He changes his mind. The book is Nuclear Folly: A History of the Cuban Missile Crisis. Serhii Plokhii is the author. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
I'm a Harper Public Schools teacher, and I represent...
Seeing someone from my block teach my class.
I'm a school security guard, and I represent...
Feeling like my culture has a place here.
As a coach, I try to represent...
The type of person I'd like to be someday.
As a Harper Public Schools employee, what could you represent to our beautiful, capable students? We're hiring and offering the chance to not just make a living, but make a difference. Join our team and...
Represent.
Apply at harforschools.org.
Some internet companies make promises on speeds they just can't deliver. Spectrum Internet offers true gig speeds to more homes while delivering more consistent download speeds, all with 99.9% network reliability. And our advanced home Wi-Fi gives customers more control and security. If it's connected, it's protected. So no matter what you do online, you can do it better with Spectrum, America's leading internet provider. Learn more at Spectrum.com. Based on internet subscribers among top ISPs, see Spectrum.com/reliability for details.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. With school out, summer is the perfect time to teach our kids real-world money skills they'll use forever. Greenlight is a debit card and the number one family finance and safety app used by millions of families, helping kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. Parents can send their kids money and track their spending and saving, while kids build money confidence and skills in fun ways. Start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/iHeart. That's greenlight.com/iHeart.